Welcome to another edition of Mincing Rascals. This is John Williams. It's our weekly podcast where we look at some of the stories in the news this past week. Why do we call it Mincing Rascals? Don't ask. Our guests today are Steve Bertrand from WGN Radio News and editorial cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune, Scott Stantis. He's also the creator of the cartoon Prickly City. Scott, welcome to the podcast.
Well, thanks for having me. I'm great.
And Steve, it's always good to hear you.
Good to be here, John.
Okay, let's talk about Savannah Guthrie and Rand Paul. He's the second candidate announced running for office. He was on the Today Show. He had an interview segment with Savannah Guthrie. I will play for you guys about 45 seconds of their interview this week.
I have had views in the past on foreign policy that are somewhat unorthodox, but you seem to have changed over the years. You once said Iran was not a threat. Now you say it is. You once proposed ending foreign aid to Israel. You now support it, at least for the time being.
Before we cut defense
spending, and now
litany.
You want to increase it 16%.
Well,
so I just wonder if you've mellowed out.
Why don't Leah let me explain instead of talking over me, okay? Before we go through a litany of things you say I've changed on, why don't you ask me a question? Have I changed my opinion?
Have you
changed
your opinion?
That would be sort of a better way to approach an interview.
Okay.
No.
Is Iran still not a threat?
You've editorialized. No. Listen. You've editorialized. Let me answer a question. You ask a question and you say, have your views changed, instead of editorializing and saying my views have changed.
All right, what do you make of that? Steve Bertrand, what do you think?
Well, I love it. I mean, I had one of these issues that I'd heard about, and then when I knew we were going to talk about it, I went back and watched the interview. And, you know, there's some allegation of sexism or something. I don't think there's any of that here.
I think he's
just prickly.
Yes, he's unpleasant to everybody.
He's completely condescending. It is gender-based, it's more than just that.
I think he'd say that to you too, John. He would treat you the exact same way.
And there are instances of other male reporters where he has been this prickly. And what's really shocking is, firstly, there's a lot of people out there, especially young people, very enthusiastic about this campaign and his candidacy. He's been, a candidate for 2 days?
This was his first full day on the trail.
Right.
I'm sorry, if it takes you that long to get that ticked off, I mean, and this is as bad as it's going to get, that's preposterous.
Although it will work for him in some ways, too, right? If he's trying to win Republican primaries in Iowa and South Carolina, and, you know, he's got this media against me, right? That helps.
Well, Sean Hannity did a rant about how Savannah Guthrie was wrong to ask those questions that way.
I think she was. I think it was clearly an agenda-driven question. It really wasn't even a question. It was a statement. And then,
really? Wait, hold on a second. What is your problem with the question that she asked?
My problem?
Yes,
I think the way it was couched, and I think that his point was badly made but well taken, that when you say, have you changed your positions? What's this? Rather than go through that whole laundry list.
Come on, Scott. As a guy who asks questions,
yeah.
If you say, have you, then you're giving them an out. Say, no, not really. So if you present the fact that, yes, you have, and arguably he certainly has.
And you have a follow-up. You have the option of a follow-up.
Right.
But that misses the point. So it's maybe an imperfectly worded question, but the issue is, why are you evolving, or are you just changing for political expediency? That's what this question's about. Everybody knows what this question's about. Why is he taking the first day on his campaign trail when he should be talking about Iran, and instead he's talking to Savannah Guthrie about how to conduct an interview?
Oh, I agree.
Can you imagine if he's sitting there with the Chinese and they do something he doesn't like?
Or negotiating with the Iranians.
I know. I mean, you know, it's a shame that we extrapolate from sometimes the smallest things, but now we know how what he's like when the going gets tough.
No,
and I don't think that's a flattering picture.
You're absolutely right. It was, at the core of it, extremely unpresidential. And that is, if you're running for president, that's a bad thing. Temperament's important. We don't want someone who's that prickly in the Oval Office with their finger hovering over the button.
I'm not a Rand Paul guy, but I don't think it's so terrible. I mean, yes, he's prickly. He behaved, you know, he didn't handle it as well as he could have. Okay, maybe he's just showing something a little more genuine, right? Not necessarily something you should strive for, but not completely polished either. But here's my point. And I think the real story of this is on page 42 of that interview. When she's asking about changing policy in Iran, he said at one point, because I wrote it down, I just watched it, he said, well, that was in 2007. That was a long time ago. I wasn't running for office then. I was helping someone else run for office. So in other words, what he's saying is, well, I didn't really believe it then either, but I was saying it for political purposes.
Yeah, this is bad all the way around. And here's the thing. When you look at someone in these circumstances, and it is temperament and it is tone, is this the person you want to say, we're starting to bomb Botswana or Canada, which we should because they're too damn quiet up there.
Something's going on.
They're up to something. Right. See? It's not just me.
I can't hear the video games in the basement. Something's going on.
Two last points about it from my perspective. One is it bothered me that I'm pretty sure the questions were being fed to her. She looked off stage as though she were listening maybe to the producer up in the booth. And she doesn't sound that, vigorous or rigorous anyway. And then for her to sort of defer to the voice in her ear saying, all right, re-ask the question this way, I think just looks bad for the Today Show. But I think Rand Paul's also seizing something that he just doesn't need to take this opportunity to seize. Does the media infuse its reporting or questioning with bias? Sure they do. And is it liberal? Yes, it almost always is. That's not news, and it's not maybe fair to the Rand Pauls of the world, but c'est la vie, dude.
What's your point? I know you want to move on, but first of all, I take exception with that characterization. And two, I think in a way you're being a little bit Randy here because I didn't notice that she was you're making a big assumption that someone was feeding her questions.
Oh, you know how electronic media people
maybe,
are.
Maybe, but also, and Paul made this point about it later. He goes, look, it's really hard to sit into a blank camera where you can't see someone's face and do it. Okay.
It's not, and he's been doing it for a while.
So maybe Guthrie was looking over the monitor to look at Rand Paul,
too. It was a split screen. Yeah, maybe so, Steve. If you and I had to place a dollar-friendly wager on it, I'm pretty confident she was getting help in her ears. And that doesn't even matter, right? I guess I'm off on a tangent.
I would argue with help. I would say maybe suggestion because she can handle it on her own.
Why did Rahm Emanuel win the election? What's the takeaway from this one? Scott, why don't you go first?
Two terrible candidates, truly. I mean, you have the incumbent who's driven the city, who's, quadrupled the debt. Our bond rating is two ticks above junk. Crime continues to be ticking upward again when it was trending down. I mean, it's all bad. But the candidate who got into the runoff with him, Jesus Chuy Garcia, was a terrible candidate. When asked, how are you going to fix these? And these are big issues, and they're tough ones. They are really, really hard. He could not answer that. And Rahm and his machine, very well-oiled, well-financed machine, went after him on that basis, saying, is this the guy you want running the city and running this budget when we're in crisis? However, it's the guy who drove the car off the cliff who's saying, do you really want this other guy to be driving? I mean, it was a terrible choice, but when push came to shove, that's the only logical decision to make.
Well, the thing is, Garcia had this sort of foisted upon him, right? Karen Lewis became ill, so he wasn't like Rand Paul or Hillary Clinton or any of those others thinking about it and formulating it for years. So he came to it late, and he was never really a viable alternative.
Well, I wonder, Karen Lewis notwithstanding, who else would be a good mayor for Chicago?
Tony Preckwinkle, who, again, if you think about throwing her into that mix, she would have been the charming one, which is, think about that one.
A little flat, maybe, but charming nonetheless.
Yeah, and she's, what she has done with county, there's a lot of, behind the scenes, wonkish gnashing of teeth about some of the things she's done, but look at what she inherited, and she said she did what she said she was going to do, and their budget is balanced, and she's doing a good job. She's a competent, if not particularly charismatic leader. I think she would have won.
I wonder if Tom Dart will ever have his day. There was talk about him running years and years ago, and I just wonder after this term or maybe the next term if he's a guy who would be interested in running still.
Do the Cubs deserve the criticism they're getting for the rollout of the season in Wrigley Field?
Yes.
Yes. I mean, first off, you can't be surprised. How many of us have had any kind of construction at all done in our home and they say, yeah, that's 2 weeks? And we know it's five.
Right.
We know it is. Couple that with they're surprised that people have to pee.
I was going to say, if I have a graduation party and invite you over and ask you to hold it, that's not a good host.
We had David Haw on last week, and I just said to him as we were previewing the Cubs season, and the home opener, I said, have you been inside the reconstructed Wrigley Field? He says, no, I haven't yet. I'm anxious to see it. I said, do you know anything about the bathrooms? And he paused. I don't know if he thought that was a silly question or not. I was flat on serious. Everybody knows about the troughs and the lines. And if you're going to make it fan friendly, I would. If you only did one thing, you'd get the bathrooms up and running and you'd get it right. And then what's the first thing I heard about was the shit show, quote unquote, that people were reporting on at Wrigley Field. And I'm just like, oh,
well,
wow,
you've got
they got it wrong.
You've got thousands of people and you're plying them with beer. Let's
you're begging them to buy your beer.
Yeah. Now let's do the math. What you don't buy it, you rent it. It was, and so they finally got a bunch of porta potties.
Porta potties.
So
yeah.
Which is fine. I mean, that's stopgap. That'll work. But can I ask you a question? Can I ask you guys a quick question? This is coming from someone who's been in the city just 6 years, which apparently is new.
Welcome to town.
The trough of the troughs. Why is there such magic? And for the lady listeners, the troughs are exactly what they sound like. They are long. Long steel troughs you pee into with other guys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't like that.
Well, no one
I don't. Does.
Oh, there's guys. Oh, no. There's
well,
people.
Actually,
you must keep the troughs. It's tradition. It's like.
Yeah. So,
you
know.
I think you can move more cows with the troughs than you can with the individual urinals.
Mm.
So, what do you want, Scott? Do you want separate little stalls?
I like
or
that.
Urinals?
I got. Okay, here's.
You have stage fright, don't you?
I do. I have nervous bladder. And
you
so,
got to get over that, man.
So I can stand there for, it's like a 20 to 30 minute adventure.
It's kind of, I know. And then you just hope they aren't noticing.
Well, yeah, because I'm behind you.
The guys are drunk and they're fast. So they go, psh, and they
I
go,
know. I always envied those guys.
And I'm going to steer this in a different direction now. Right. I wish I could give the credit because I can't remember the name of the reporter of either. But someone in the Tribune brought up the other day that it was reported 5 or 6 weeks ago on a tour of Wrigley that they said that they were working, that they knew they were going to be behind on a grandstand bathroom.
Yes.
So it wasn't as if this was an opening day sort of surprise. They knew they were in trouble.
Yeah.
And why not bring the porta potties in at opening? They're,
and then there's that whole postponement of game two.
Yeah, right. The suspicious weather related. Yeah.
You can't play in fog.
Yes, you can.
110
Cub fans
years.
Have sat through every kind of terrible weather.
And I was at a game once, guys. I'm sorry to keep interrupting. I was at a game once. Ray Burris was pitching for the Cubs. So it would have been mid to late 70s. And you couldn't read. I was behind home plate. You couldn't read the scoreboard. There was that much fog in the
and
area.
And let's be fair, they've been playing in a fog since 1908.
Exactly.
So
here's the one, though. This is me being defensive on behalf of the Ricketts, and that is I just can't imagine a city embracing somebody who is trying to do something good for their town less
right.
than Chicago has embraced the Ricketts' hundreds of millions of dollars to improve. We've put a roadblock up every step of the way, and then the weather didn't cooperate either. I mean, can they just at least get a bone on the fact that it has not been easy for them?
When they brought in, let's face
they're
it.
They're not complete incompetence is what I'm saying.
No, they've got Epstein as the GM, or you've got the new manager, Madden. I mean, they've done some really smart stuff, and they're bringing in some talent. They may or may not win. You know, we know the Cubs, and we know the answer to that one. But you're right. I think you're right. What's really weird to me, I have to admit, right now at this moment, is John Williams is defending a 1%er.
Right,
I really am.
No,
I really am.
It's true, though. I mean, it's like someone said, I want to spend all this money to make this better, to help you make more money.
Yeah.
And we said, prove it.
Yeah.
Well,
we
had an editorial board meeting with the rooftop guys, and I've never, and I think one of them was the one who's now under indictment, but I've never sat in with people who felt more clouded and more entitled. I mean, my take on that whole rooftop thing has always been, this is like you have HBO in your house, and the neighbor across the street watches it through their binoculars.
Absolutely.
And then you close the shades, and they call their lawyer.
I think that analogy is brilliant and apt. The only problem is that the guy with HBO in your scenario agreed to leave the drapes open and signed a contract to that effect. That was the mistake.
That was the Tribune Company, wasn't it?
Yes, it
They've
was.
They've made a lot of good decisions.
Okay, one last thing. Hillary Clinton is almost certainly going to announce within 48 hours of this conversation we're having.
Oh, thank God.
That she'll run for office. What's your reaction to it? Okay, Scott, finish that.
I think that, and I'm not, you know my politics generally, but if I was a progressive, if I was a Democrat, I would not like that candidacy only because this is a person who has really spent most of her career kowtowing and servicing the 1%ers. She's not a progressive. She's not a particularly good leader. She's not particularly likable. At least her public persona is not. I would hope that if I was in your shoes, and I'm presuming something here, so correct me if I'm wrong, but something like an Elizabeth Warren stepping forward would be a real godsend, because I think she, Hillary, her day has passed. And, I mean, look what we're looking at. We're looking at a possible Clinton-Bush race in the fall of 2016.
What do you think, Steve Bertrand?
I think that it's way too late for Elizabeth Warren, or, I mean, Lincoln Chafee said he's going to run this week. All of those things that Scott said are probably true, although I think she is probably among the most qualified Americans right now to run for president.
Yeah, people say that, but I will challenge you to say what. Okay, yes, she was a U.S. senator. What major legislation did she
was Secretary of State.
And
she
what did
was
she
First
do?
Lady for 8 years.
Well, First Lady, that's...
I'm sorry.
No, she's pretty active. I mean,
she was pretty involved.
She's got the experience.
What can you have on your resume other than I was also president that she doesn't have?
Well, George H.W. Bush had a great resume when he was elected president. What kind of president was he? I mean, he was a one-termer.
He didn't have her resume. He was a governor for a term and a half.
No. You're going to lose
his wife. I'm sorry. You're right. H.W. was head of the CIA, head of the Republican Party, congressman from Texas.
Here's why I'm sad about Hillary running, because I think it's going to be this. It's going to be not only just everybody shooting at everybody verbally and intellectually for a year and a half, but God forbid she gets elected. For 4 years, you will have a population in this country that is even more unhappy than they are now with the current administration. And I actually don't think that's good for us to be as divided as her winning will be. She will not be a uniter if she wins. And if she were president for 8 years, I don't think it would be good for the country. And I think the campaign would be so divisive.
Yeah.
I'm sad about the very... And by the way, I could vote for Hillary. I don't want her to run.
Here's the thing. I mean, I agree. That was my next point, was it's going to be exhausting, because everything is going to be a major issue. It's going to be absolutely exhausting. Will she be a uniter? Maybe not, but she won't be afforded the opportunity to unite either. So in a way, I'm always leery of punishing one person for the behavior of the other too, right? So there are two people dancing in this dance. And I mean, look at Obama. Obama did or did not reach out to the Republicans, but the Republicans certainly weren't ready to reach out to him either.
That's why if we ever found a moderate who could win a primary.
Yeah.
Lord. Guys, let's close this podcast with something you've been seeing, hearing, or reading lately. Movie or TV show, book, or song that you want to pass along as a recommendation. You were looking something up, Scott.
Yeah,
Stantis.
I got it.
What was that?
It was a book I'm reading, and this is going to, just by saying it, your listeners are going to fall asleep, but it's a single-volume biography of Calvin Coolidge, who I knew nothing about. Yeah, I know. It made me giggle too. But
I'm
I picked
wide awake
it
over here.
I picked it up at a book fair we have here, and you buy books by the pound, and so it looked interesting. I knew nothing about the guy, and it's fascinating. It's Calvin Coolidge. It's written by Amity Schlaes.
Schlaes.
Oh, yeah,
oh, sure.
Yeah.
She's great. She wrote this? She's
yes,
terrific.
Yes, and it's a very good. It's a well-written book, and he's an interesting character. And it also addresses what to me is the fascinating aspect of the presidency. Like when you see a Bush or a Kennedy or a Roosevelt win the presidency, you expect that. That's not a surprise. But when you see someone like a Coolidge, or frankly like a Reagan or a Clinton, who's, you know, there's no way in God's green earth they should have been president. But, you know, fate played a role. Ambition, of course, and hard work helped a lot. But so this has been a fascinating book so far. I've really enjoyed it. And it's on the heels of reading a biography of Ulysses S. Grant. And it was not a good biography. So we won't talk about that.
The Greedy Hand was the I read her The Greedy Hand and sure enjoyed that. What about you, Steve Bertrand?
I just finished a book called Where You Go Is Not Who You'll Be.
Yeah, I have that too. I haven't read it yet. Do you like it?
I did. New York Times columnist Frank Bruni wrote it, and I interviewed him this week for Steve Bertrand on Books, actually. So you can jump from this podcast to that one. But the idea is that, you know, we put so much emphasis on what school a kid's going to get into. And they're all getting their results this week either, or this month, from ACT or their acceptance levels. We put so much emphasis on that. And, you know, kids end up going to great schools and disappointed because they didn't get into greater schools. When really, I think, and he argues, that you make your own education.
Yeah.
Depending on where the school you go to. And we just put too much emphasis sometimes on the Princetons and the Stanfords and all of that.
Yeah. What's the title of that again? Where You Go Is Not Who You Are?
Where You Go Is Not Who You'll Be.
Who You'll Be by Frank Bruni.
Right.
Interestingly, this week I interviewed the young lady you may have heard about who got accepted into all 8 Ivy League schools, plus Stanford and Georgetown. She's a Minnesotan, and so she also got accepted to the University of Minnesota, which I think was her safety school in that list. I asked her, I said, what's your ACT score, your GPA? She said, I don't like to share it because, and I've never been more intimidated interviewing a 17-year-old. She said, because where I go to school, we want it to be about the joy of learning. We get too hung up on the number, the GPA, or to your point, Steve, even the school you go to, we should just want to learn to love to learn and do the best we can, said the girl.
Where I live, it is verboten to discuss ACT scores.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You guys in your house don't kick those around?
No, in my school district, and I think in many areas now, yeah, you do not. It's bad form to ask someone, even their friend, your friend.
Yeah.
What their kid got on an ACT.
I just agree. Don't talk about it. I totally agree.
But I don't think it's healthy because it's about all of this competition, you know, so it's a way to sort of avoid that conversation because it's so competitive about where you're going to go.
In a moment, I'm going to talk to John Ronson. He wrote So You've Been Publicly Shamed. I don't know if I recommended that on this segment before, but I'll do it again if I have. The title is just what you think it is. It's about public shaming, in this case on the internet, and how we crash down on people who have, you know, made a mistake. Some of them deserve it, a lot of them don't. He's found these people who have been humiliated worldwide on the internet and talks to them about what that was like. It's timely and fascinating. So You've Been Publicly Shamed.
Yeah, read that. Thank you.
Steve Bertrand, WGN Radio News, and Scott Stantis, the editorial cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune. That's his Prickly City cartoon as well. Nice to talk to you, fellas. Thanks for joining us.
You bet, John.
Thanks for having me.